Hello, romantics. I'm Sarah Gomez, author, romance lover, and host. You're listening to Romancing the Story, a podcast centered around writing, reading, and story structure, all with a twist of romance. We're at episode number 28, and on today's episode, I talk to CJ Critt about the preparation, time, and different methods in narrating an audiobook, and the process of finding a narrator. Whether you're an author looking to narrate an audiobook, or find a narrator, or you're a narrator interested in getting into audiobooks, CJ has an abundance of knowledge from a long, fruitful career in long-form narration and voiceover. Our interview covers what goes on behind the mic to help bring your words to life. All of CJ's information is in the show notes if you'd like to connect. And the link to my YouTube channel is also in the show notes if you'd like to see our interview and CJ's home audio booth in the background, as well as walk through the breathing exercises a bit better with CJ as she demonstrates. With that said, let's jump right into the interview.
That's already encouraging that either it's the timing, they're interested in your audiobook and narration. It's also an inexpensive way to dip your toe and see what it's like. So I think people can know that, you know, they're going to learn a lot and it'll be fun and it will be pretty painless.
Welcome, narrator, award-winning creative artist, and produced theater writer, CJ Critt.
Thank you. Hi, Sarah. Nice to be here today.
And I know, CJ, we have kind of made an acquaintance through some of your workshops. Like, I took some of the workshops about narration and voiceover. But in case listeners don't know, can you tell them a little bit about yourself and your very impressive credentials?
Well, I like to say that I've been performing since dinosaurs roamed the subways. And many, many years ago, I went to New York for formal training for the stage. And then after I, as a lot of young people are, tap there, if you do get representation, you start doing commercials. So that is usually the easiest entree point for certainly back in the day. But how that has changed now is you no longer need to have necessarily an agent, necessarily live on the coast or belong to any of the unions. If you have a great talent and perseverance, home studio and your own personal editing skills, and you can couple that with certain ease with technology, you can start working. So it's very exciting how the gatekeepers of yesterday, they still exist, but their importance is much less. And they are much easier to circumvent for ambitious people with a good, you know, step-by-step career path. So I was kind of old school. And I did those things where you lived in New York and you lived in, quote, a hellhole to save money, to be able to take classes, to be able to drop your icky day job at a second, and then, you know, go on the road and do shows. And most people, wherever they landed up, if you came through like the New York theater or New York acting school experience, you worked on stage. So that's always sort of the backdrop for what I do as a kind of big over the top performer, but it also informs my audiobook work because I like to make a distinction between narrator neutral, that calm, omniscient, all-knowing voice you could listen to for hours and hours and not go completely nuts, and then to be able to animate that voice with a whole range of characters. The current school, I think, of thought is sort of in two classes. The voiced narration, old school people like me, when you're a little girl, you're a little girl. And when you're the crusty grandpa, yeah. So you have different voices for each character. You fully inhabit them. You live their emotional life. You don't, you know, do impressions, but I will tell, you know, students and people I'm working with, if you can, you know, channel a famous actor, if you can hear your own version of, you know, John Wayne, Bruce Willis, you know, someone for a female voice, like someone great, like Meryl Streep, who can do lots of different voices. So if you can hear a voice or your drama teacher from school or the Sunday school teacher or your parents, if you can channel voices that are very close to you and own them, it can add a lovely extra dimension to your work. Not everybody can do that. And it's not necessary anymore. That's the neat thing now. Again, if your flavor is more, I'm very subtle, I just do very nuanced changes. When I'm a guy, I just talk a little differently than when I'm the female, but I don't do completely different voices. That is what we normally think of as the unvoiced narration. You still need to act. You still need to connect with the material, but you do not have to have a repertoire, you know, a little schizophrenia repertoire of all these characters living in your head. And for some people, that's the fun of it, because it's like you never get older. You just, your voice deepens a little bit. it. But you still have this huge repertoire of ages, gender, nationality. And it's very exciting as a creative person to try to channel that. It's also sometimes really hard. I've had what might have been called this kind of a light, almost formulaic mystery, but it took place in Europe. And it was one impossible to pronounce capital of Slovakia, Hungary, and Poland after another. Everything would have 13 consonants and two vowels. So, I mean, you know, you'd go to, there are many great resources online. Great if you can find a native speaker, someone at your library that can help you. But if you're trying to be accurate, these things can be a lot of extra prep time and a lot of extra work to the project. So I had already been I'd had an extensive acting career by the time I started audiobooks in my late 30s. Again, many moons ago, I'd already done theater. I'd already done lots of commercials. I'd already done a little touring and wanted to work in the city. So when you want to work in the city, you know, you try to get the things that, you know, pay you better than, say, you know, your day job or your food service or something else might. And you start making, hey, that's my real career. So fortunately, like everything, it's who you know. And a friendly actor walked me down the street one day after a commercial audition. We both had a good commercial agent. We're laughing and talking about that. You don't really care about commercials. You're thrilled to get the job, but it's not like, oh, I really want to be the voice of Geico. I'm so, oh, please. It's not like that, you know, oh, I'd love to get that gig, but it's a different emotional connection. When you get to read the words of great authors, you know, it's just like, you know, your own Broadway solo show, because you're going to do 2 to 4 hours of solid quality performance each time you go in the booth. And for me, that requires quite a bit of preparation. So not everybody does it that way. And if you don't have to worry about keeping your characters consistent and really acting, maybe it takes a little less time. But almost no one wings it completely. You just almost always need to. And people be like, no, you mean you read it once? Uh-huh. Then you read it again and took notes? Uh-huh. And then just before you went to the studio, you read like 10 or 15 pages out loud to warm up? Yes, I did. And you've been doing it how long? Forever. And the reason I do that is so that when I go in the studio, it's fun and I can relax. And I still can have a bad day and make mistakes, but I'm way more prepared. And I'm way less likely to go, oh, I keep screwing up that line on 117. It's so, what a tongue twister, because I didn't prepare for it. So if I prepare for tricky things in advance and I learn how that one phrase of Yiddish is supposed to go, and I think, okay, am I going to sing the part of the song? Or am I just going to speak it? I'll send an email maybe to the author or the publisher. So you do your due diligence and you do your own research. In the good old days, sometimes the audiobook producer studio had someone on staff that did that. You turned in a list. They didn't read it along your shoulder and pat you on the head every time. How about this? Let's look it up. You know, they wouldn't do that. But you would spend a long time, you know, on maybe the second pass making those notes by hand, and then of course typing it. Back when I started, I think we just used a stylus and rock, but it's advanced since then, Sarah, just a little bit. So anyway, you know, it's a lot of preparation. So for your authors who think, oh, I can read, it'll be a snap. If they've already been an actress or an actor, if they've already been a good public speaker, a good school teacher, a defense attorney, there are certain professions that prepare you to also read your book out loud. But it isn't for everyone, because you care about your writing and you want someone who's just as good at what they do, who cares about your writing, serving up those words like a delicious food on a plate, and you're the boss. So that can be very appealing for people to have the input of like, oh, I listened to 10 really good voices, but I really like these two people. And then I asked them to read an excerpt from my book, and I could just hear her, you know, and on the podcast, coming out of the bookstore, doing the live audience, you know, meeting people. So you just hopefully you'll find that dream voice, and you might be it. The writer might be it. It has worked for some people beautifully, but it often can cloud the good writing, because then maybe if you're not so great at it or you're not comfortable doing it, it's stilted. You kind of undermine your own good work, and you might put the focus not so much on, gee, those are wonderful characters. I could live with that. When's the sequel coming out, or how's that franchise going? Just like, whew, we got through it with the author. Kind of a vanity project. She wasn't bad, but you know. So, I mean, I have had authors change reader in the middle of a very successful series for someone else they kind of fall in love with. And I've had just one who always wanted to do it herself, and she finally did. She changed publishers. I think she different notch on the publishing, you know, strata. Mm-hmm. But one of the conditions was, I get to record my own books. I said, okay. And at least the first one, you know, before the publicist scrubbed it, was very validating to see these things online that someone said, look, check out this link, because I don't really look for this stuff. And I looked and it was like, what happened to the other narrator? She used to be fun and sassy and sexy. This was like a grumpy old lady. It was like, okay. And then, so, did CJ Crit die? What happened? So, you know, anyway, it just makes you laugh because sometimes it's not a good idea. And then other people, another author who took kind of over her reading franchise, and people like her. And she, I think, is preferred by many, Barbara Kingsolver. So she's written several lovely literary gems, and I've done several books for her, and I love doing them long, you know, many moons ago. And then she started maybe with the Boxwood Bible. Anyway, some notable literary, nice pieces of writing, but now she, I think, is her own narrator. So for some people, they make the transition beautifully, and their voice is so authentic that the fans love them. So yay, when it works out. Once I started doing audiobooks, I did most of them, the first couple hundred, no, not first couple, maybe the first 125, 150 in New York City, and then would go back and forth from Dallas, where I live, to New York, where I had my little apartment for many years, back and forth. And then eventually they kicked me out of my apartment because they realized that I had a Dallas address and had paid taxes here and gotten some mail here. It didn't look good. I had what they called a rent-stabilized apartment. I loved it, but you couldn't stay indefinitely if you didn't follow, jump through certain hoops and do certain things. So I was not in total compliance, as my lawyer kindly told me, to the tune of many thousands of dollars. I tried to become compliant, but it was too late, too much too late. So I'd had a really great deal of living in this tiny hellhole in New York City in Chelsea, which is all gone now. The whole building's gone. The buildings next to it are gone. They really wanted to tear it all down and make some behemoth, you know, huge complex. And that's fine. That, you know, sadly, progress. But really, when I moved in, it was a cobblestone street. It was a walk up. There was a bathtub in the kitchen. It was like from the 1890s with very little updates. So our stove looked like it came off the set of the 1950s Honeymooners. It was pale green and another shade of green, and, you know, gas. And you just hope you didn't blow out. And a couple of times the building was full of gas and I called the fire department to, you know, save the building. And that was not enough to be able to keep me there. It's like, hey, wait a minute. I'm the one that called the fire department. Sorry, lady, if it had blown up, we'd have gotten the insurance money. So, you know, very cool. Very cool. But the great thing about living there in kind of an edgy place is that you hear all the rhythms in the street, and you ride a subway or you're at a street corner and there's a Greek voice and there are Chinese voices and there's somebody from Brooklyn. And so that is a really wonderful thing for a voice actor, just to listen to this universe of voices and try to be anonymous and soak them up. So that's really great fun. Did that for years in New York. And then I've also lived here in Dallas for quite some time, and have a little house in Oak Cliff. And right behind me is a Pro Tools and a Rode mic and kind of semi soundproofing and a little special Aurelux kind of egg crate like foam, really nice stuff. And I've done a bunch of full length romance novels here. I call it Cactus Erotica, always kind of the same formulaic story. And more recently, I've done children and picture books, which I love because they're very beautifully written and elegant illustrations. And there's no trying to, you know, make out with yourself in a small enclosed space, which is, you know, fun for the listener. It was excruciating to do. So this is, that kind of brings us up to today. I am still teaching. It's great fun. I was a staff writer at Disney Radio and also taught in-house there kind of how to create your character on air, on radio. And also we wrote a zillion scripts and all that other kind of fun stuff. When that station closed, it closed actually the whole studio here in North Dallas down about 7-8 years ago, I started pivoting into teaching. And so I've taught for DAMPA, Dallas Academy of Music and Performing Arts. DAMPA, it sounds like something moist you find in the shower. But at any rate, it was a very nice academy for mostly younger people. And I probably, my strength would be older teens and adults and people who might actually really be sort of serious about this and really want to work, because I feel like they can grow the most. And other people who are having fun and dabbling, great. If they're willing to come out and play, love to have them too. So since my DAMPA days, I've been coaching one-on-one privately, and then also for the Lupo, I think it's 1190 Lupo or 1130 Lupo, which was formerly Stage Dallas, and then a very nice theater group called Stage West in Fort Worth. And all through the pandemic, we've been Zoom teaching, which has been perfect for one-on-one voice and small group voice classes. I don't want to teach a class with 20 people. No one's going to get any attention. It's not fair. Mm-hmm. So I like to work 6 to 8 people. That's my happy max. four is a little like, okay, you're going again and again. Okay. So it's nice to have more people because you learn from each other. And some people are obviously really strong and ready to work and others less so. But we all learn from each other. And it's great to encourage the people who were shy on minute five, but by minute 55, they're doing it. So I like to help people feel safe and have fun and laugh and realize that, you know, though I always tell people it's show business and not show friends, we still need to have fun. We still needs to be fun. So the classes are very fun. They're usually 90 minutes to 2 hours, depending on if it's a class in a series or like a one-off. Those are usually a little bit longer. And in addition to focus groups or focus classes on narration and audiobooks, which is called, you know, long form audio, we also do classes on anime voices. Lots of really fun short one line and paragraph things where, you know, you're a maid, you're a wizard, you're a warrior, you're a robot. You know, you just keep changing it up, or you're a teenager, you're old. So it's really fun. And it requires you to be versatile, not think too hard, and jump in. And the anime, if anyone has worked in those studio situations, you can't prepare. Like I was all about preparation for the audiobook, completely different skill set. Try to read verbatim. Try not to freak out because it's right in front of you. And then there's the Japanese image on one side. So people are going, Tanaka, let's go now, Tanaka. So you have to try to like match, you know, the American with their English with the flat lip. So it's very fun and challenging, a little like rubbing your tummy and patting your head. There are realistic stories, but lots of fantasy, lots of sci-fi, lots of mythical worlds. And of course, there are Japanese culture things that don't always translate to the U.S. So that the translators are in there trying to make, you know, the storyline work, the cultural things not be too jarring, the lip flaps match. So all that stuff's very technical before we, the voice talent, even walk in. You don't get to prepare in advance. You don't even get it in the waiting room, the script. You go in, you see it for the first time. When they preview roll it for you, you get to just see your little section. And then you do your little section with a lot of very specific direction. So it's fun because it's different every time. Even if you play the same character, you don't know what your lines are going to be. You have to take direction and on the fly without getting defensive about going faster, going slower, you know, do it softer, be upset, you know. So you have to be able to make those changes. So it's like a little workout. And I love that. So it's a very fun thing for me to get to do. Lots of Sarah age voices, a lot of younger voices are in the field. And a lot of younger people are behind the consoles. So it's kind of fun to be in there kind of as the wacky, you know, wacky elder and get to do some fun stuff for them. And as a matter of fact, I just did an anime job today. So I was really glad that all this worked out. Yeah.
And you're such a wealth of knowledge. And I really loved all the workshops because of social audio and the advance in technology. It's kind of become the great equalizer, right? Because you mentioned you had to go to New York to do the recordings, and now you can do them from your home.
That's right. You could do this from your home. I know a few far more successful voice actors than me because I've always had this diffuse, you know, I'd write the musical theater, I get on stage, I'd love to do the voice work. So, you know, have lips will travel. But I know some voice specialists, I mean, they have great portable equipment. They're on vacation with their husband. They go into the closet at the hotel. They put up this little amphitheater thing, a really nice little mic, then they upload, they book spots. So it is extremely technology friendly. And if you have ease with technology, it's a huge advantage over actors who are just too precious with it all. And there was a time, Sierra, hard to believe, but we were like, not allowed to touch the microphone. Lady, just back up. Oh, I got a guy for that. So I was like, okay. So like you were, you know, if you were a timid person around, like if I touch, oh, what I did, I broke it. So if you're that kind of person, you know, it was kind of okay. You weren't expected to do anything, but have a great voice, read well, don't screw up too much, you know, and then get there on time and leave. So, you know, it was very easy. So now that you have to, you know, do on your own research, have your own equipment, maintain it properly, know how to edit, get the dog to be quiet, you know, all of that stuff's going on. And it really is like, blah, 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 blah. So, I mean, those who can, yay. I'm so excited for, you know, my students are out there, you know, hitting it and doing all these creative things because it's like, I'm still better if I could just do one thing the time. But when I put a show on, I have to wear a lot of hats and I think if you are involved in voice, having another creative hat that you're passionate about, I think it informs your work in a good way. And then when little poopy things happen and disappointments happen, they're not as crushing, and you jump into the next thing, and then one thing kind of feeds the other. By writing, I create voices and characters and ideas for other people to bring to life, and sometimes they surprise you with the most wonderful, hilarious inventions. Wow. And I thought I was inventing. No, they just surprise you. So that is always, that's a great joyful thing for me. Listening back to myself, I can do it. It's sort of like taking medicine. I don't enjoy it. Hearing my music or the jokes and the thing play out with other people doing it and the audience enjoying it, it's just golden. So that gives me, you know, great amount of pleasure. When I am the voice of the author, like in a live show, and everyone's super enjoying words I've already read and recorded once before, that is very pleasurable because then I'm less focused on, did I do a good job or they like it? That's the feedback. It lets you know right away that this is a success. So you have to kind of find those joy spots, I think, as a performer, whether it's in recording or the sharing it with others or letting people know you finished something or teaching and having a real successful class environment. I know Sarah has some creative partners that she's doing these really great projects with. Mm-hmm. We do need a creative community that kicks our are behind and encourages us and is there mostly to lift up. Occasionally you want helpful criticism, but mostly we want them to lift us up because usually we will beat ourselves up and the world does enough of that. So our friends, not so much. Don't leave. If anyone's listening, go, well, I really value so-and-so's idea because they pull no punches, maybe because they're bitter or maybe because they know so much, but they don't do it. So seek wise counsel from people that will tell you the truth and you absolutely want to know, am I wasting my time? Am I stupid to spend the money? But mostly go for the people who say yes, who are in your corner, who believe in you, because they'll help you find solutions rather than just identify everything you did wrong. There's always plenty we did wrong. And so, you know, there's a certain amount of technical expertise, like you want to be critical so you don't turn in sloppy work. That's different from being so critical, harsh, and paralyzed by perfection. Mm. So if you are paralyzed by, this is the PPP, the paralyzing pursuit of perfection, it won't help you, right? So sometimes you just got to do your best, screw up, take your notes, have your licks, have a cocktail and recover, you know, because without failure and less than, we don't grow. So if you hate that, it just makes you upset. I'm saying it, take classes. So to have a safe place to stretch, grow, be poopy, stretch, grow. You got it, right? It is not like gymnastics where those girls can break their neck. You will not break your neck at the microphone. It will not happen, but you can have, you know, little risks and challenges. And then that exciting sense like, oh, I did three voices. I didn't even know I had those. Oh my God. That's like a friend from camp. And I think that's the guy at the 7-Eleven. I mean, you just don't even know where this repertoire that lives in you could be tapped. And it's exciting when you get to do that because it's another layer of nuance you can bring for audiobooks that you can bring to the world of the universe of these characters. So that's always great fun. I don't think you have like Jim Dale, brilliant master of the Harry Potter stuff. I mean, you have like 30, 50, 100 voices. You don't have to have that many. But let's say you have 5 to 10 really good, unique voices for the, you know, your main cast of characters for an audiobook. And they can be subtle differences, but you could always hear them and identify them both by the writing that informs you and the, you know, mental, emotional choice that you connect to them. I just think that it enhances the experience for people. And then the other people that just come in once, a waitress, a cop, those can be a little more generic, a little more subtle. But as always, play the text. And as I probably mentioned to Sarah and others, think of yourself as a detective. If you're the reader, if it isn't your own work, what do they have in mind? What is the clue here? Is there subtext? Are they saying this, but they really mean something completely different? Make choices. Mm-hmm. If you make choices, it's going to be a much better read. Even if sometimes I have barked up the wrong tree before. So, oh my God, this guy's the boyfriend. Oh, I've been playing him. He's kind of a snarky jerk. And then you have to kind of suddenly change. But that has only happened once or twice in, you know, 20 years. So most of the time you nail it. Most of the time you get it.
Had some great input and I always learn something every time I go to your workshops. So yeah. I love going because I feel like I do learn something new every time. Like you said, you're always learning and growing, I think, as a narrator, as a voice actor.
Yes.
And I also do, as I've kind of told you about, I've produced several audiobooks, about a dozen. And I often get the same questions from authors. And you kind of touched upon it a little bit of when should I narrate my own book versus maybe when I should find a narrator? Because that's something I often get of like, but I kind of want, I want to do it because I know what they sound like in my head. But mm-hmm. then I often ask them, well, have you practiced? Have you kind of seen if it translates as what you think it will.
And have they, I mean, can they say, yes, I have, or let me send you some samples? Do they ever do that?
Some have sent me samples, and I was like, oh, absolutely. I think you can absolutely do this. And they have no qualms about, like you said, kind of learning and growing, because they're like, okay, yeah, I don't like the sound of my voice. And it took me a while too, right, to get accustomed to the sound of your voice a lot of times when you're first starting out, but then they eventually get to a more comfortable place. And like you said, they did have some experience with like theater work, or, they did a little, like a little, performance pieces, maybe in college or in high school. So they took that with them, and they were able to really utilize that as a voice acting tool.
And it builds on a level of confidence. And if someone has done no performing and they do not speak at church, and they do, it's, I'm not saying they couldn't do it, but it's a bigger leap. And they could have one of those gifts that no one's ever, my God, you have a wonderful voice. But like, that's always like a touchstone. If people have, whoever these authors, have people been telling you forever that they love your voice? Or would you read to them? Or would you do the phone? If you hear that, that is like the universe saying like, oh, that's a yummy voice. Oh, I could listen to you read forever. And I do hear from people who somebody's telling them that, and I don't really hear wonderfulness in their voice, but they must have some warm down home quality. And then I think, well, let me listen again. Let's see what you do with material. So it is both the, you know, kind of the God-given genetic, how did your mom and dad talk? You know, some of those things are a little bit innate. You can't change it completely. But hey, actors change their voice. So if someone wanted to improve their voice, relax, bring the timbre down, learn to slow down so that the words are served up more beautifully and their voice is going to sound as good as it's ever going to sound. You can do that in a few sessions, you know. You wouldn't even have to take a full hour. I mean, you could train for that. To be even a better, it's like playing jazz. A lot of white plays jazz, you know, bibbity boo boo, you know, but you could be better if you know how your instrument works. So if you know how your instrument works, and theater is a good background, singing is a good background, choir, you know, so if someone has a music background, a theater background, you know, speech and drama, debate, all those things are very helpful. If they've been like a youth minister and their work is sort of semi-autobiographical, that could be very, very helpful. And then the confidence. So the skill and the confidence, add repetition, add some choices, research, practice. And a lot of times, because people are reading their own stuff, they think, well, I didn't really need to practice. I know it. Yes, you do. I've done a lot of solo shows where I wrote the whole hour and a half and I had to memorize it. And I had to, well, usually it was never more than an hour because I, you know, can't memorize more than that. But still, I would have to write it and memorize it. If I didn't keep practicing it out loud, I would never have been able to memorize it. And I would never have been able to edit it as nearly as effectively. Because when you read your work out loud, you realize, oh, I've used the same adjective three times in that paragraph. I didn't really notice that. You don't notice it until you read it out loud. And if you're self-published, self-editing, self-proofing, I have read for money, nice money, things that were just crawling with typos, where the person promised me several people had done a pass, like shocking. And I'm thinking, honey, did anyone read it out loud? Because they could not have thought that's a sentence, that's a word. So that's another thing that reading it out loud gives you. I'm not saying that your group is not disciplined and can't do that. Of course they can. But you'd be surprised. The work I've read for money that was just like every page, they were like, come on, there's spell check. Even I can use spell check. So I mean, it would just, yeah, be like shocking. So that's when you need to know. If you have never done theater, no one's ever loved your voice, and you tend to be stuck on everything's got to be perfect, you probably will not do yourself a favor recording your work. If you're going to work with someone like Sarah, you know, a talented producer who is kind but astute as to what is good or not good, yes, you send your samples in. And then if you want to read it, have experience, but you don't love your voice, take a couple coaching lessons. Work with either a singing vocal coach or a speaking coach to help find that sweet spot in your speaking voice, which you probably won't get when you're nervous, because you'll talk too fast and you'll sound kind of pinched and you get tired so darn fast. You learn to relax. You sit up straight, like, you know, grandma told you to play the piano, good posture. You learn how to do that as a speaker. Your voice lasts longer. You sound lovely for your 1 to 2 hours a day. I would not, if you're doing it yourself, ladies, gents, I would not recommend recording more than 2 hours a day. The day can be longer than that. An hour to prepare, 2 hours to record, an hour to edit and do cleanups. And then if you're feeling it, you could do your retakes that night. Or some people like to do it all at the end. But I mean, you could have a process that lasts more than 2 hours. Don't perform more than 2 hours. Why? You'll get fatigued. you will have a hard time matching voices and energy and levels. So you want to be able to start at the, you know, it was a dark and stormy night when Jeremy and Gabrielle pulled up. You want to start there and at the end of the thing. And then, and in the morning, we'll find out why there were dead bodies everywhere. You don't want to go to complete in the morning, you know, you just, you gotta, and you will. I mean, if you haven't ever done it before, it'd be not as silly as that, but you will not have that same continuous, seamless flow. The trick is, you want your listener, it's 8 hours, 10 hours, 1 hour. You want them to think you sat down and read the whole freaking thing in one long go, taking a couple of breaks. That's the gag. If you can pull that off, harder to do when you're fatigued, harder to do if your stay spans. Sometimes for deadlines, we have to work longer, 6 hours, 8 hours. That's tough unless you're a seasoned pro. You might even be able to do it really well for a day or two, and then you probably have laryngitis. So it's much better to do 1 to 2 hours of perfect work. You're perfectious without stopping at, you know, keep it going. And how do you keep going without making a lot of mistakes? Rehearsal, prepare, prepare. That morning, the night before, you know, again, read your, even your, if it's your own work, ladies and gents, read it all once to yourself to kind of understand, like, oh yes, I forgot about, oh, Jeremy does have that New York accent. Okay, I'm going to listen to some Netflix, you know, do your preparation and then read it out loud, at least, you know, a half to two thirds of what you hope to record each day. Read it out loud the night before, the day of, because you'll be really warmed up. You'll have encountered the tricky things, and you might even see a boo-boo or typo you just did not imagine was there. Even reading it carefully to yourself, you will not hear and see it in the same way as if you read it out loud. I've read quite a few self-published authors, and the people, they had some writing talent, but they just, you know, it was a little sloppy. And so you wouldn't want to send that out. And this is another check and balance. It's another chance for you to catch anything in your work that you don't love before it maybe goes to publisher, or even because it's yours, you can make a tiny correction. You don't have to ask permission. It's yours. So I just, you know, I really cannot urge that enough. Read your own work out loud and prepare. Don't record for more than 1 hour. If you're a little bit like, God, you get tired quick. If you're older, you don't have a wonderful voice, it wears out. 2 hours is a really good session. Just think, like, if you went to Broadway, how many people by themselves can do a 2 hour show? Not too many stars. Think about it. There's not that many. A lot of people can do an hour beautifully, you know, in cabaret and our comedians. 2 hours is tough. So you want to be giving high quality energy and work for those 2 hours. And after that, you want to take a break and then eat something, rest, you know, don't go nuts. Going to record the next day. Read that night, you know, take a long hot bath, read that night. Unwind, read that night. So I just say the more you prepare, the more pleasurable it is when you do the work, and the higher level of quality and the fewer retakes and HELL that you will make for yourself. So that's what I would say. If you're unsure and you get scared easy and you are just paralyzed by perfectionism, I definitely would look and be the boss. Get auditions, pick your favorite voice. You probably will not sit in the studio and micromanage the whole session. It will just be too crazy. Things won't get done, but you can have notes and you can tell people what you're looking for. And also I have communicated successfully with authors like, what do you, you know, here are three pronunciations for this small town. What do you prefer? The author gets to tell you, you get to say it. So you can say, I think that, Genevieve does not have a French accent, but you always say her name like Genevieve, you know, like if you have specific things like that, you get to communicate that. Those would be called like little research notes, and you'd send those over ahead of time. And so it's not like you are absent, even if you're, paying someone to do your own book. Thank God if your publisher will pay. That's the best thing. You want your publisher to think so highly of your book that they'll pay. But if that's not available to you, the other option is, and Sarah's probably aware of this too. Yes, you pay a top pro. You listen to his or her audition stuff. You pick your favorite person. You come together on whatever your contract's going to be. They execute, you pay, hooray. Or you can look into acx.org if you haven't already. And that acts like a clearinghouse where people will audition for your work and you are the author. And of course, eventually, if the book is produced in the audio form, you'll get money with every download. But there are ways in which you pay upfront or not until royalties come in to your narrator. So the difference is they have something called royalty share. You don't pay up front. It's like writing a script on spec for Hollywood. You don't know what's going to happen. If you don't write the script, nothing happens. So the person auditions, they agree to do this because they're not making any money for sure. They might, but nothing, you know, it's not guaranteed. So they work. They turn in their book. They go through quality control. You start downloading it. And with, and let's say it's a good book and people want to, you know, have some legs and it gets a lot of downloads. With each download, the actor, the narrator gets part of that, of the royalty share. And there are tiered versions of that where you can pay someone a little bit of money per hour and half of their royalty share. So they get a guarantee of something. And what happens is usually they're newer narrators, so they may not be as experienced. They may not be able to completely deliver the product, but you do get to audition and you don't have to pick something. If you don't hear anyone you like, you don't have to pick anybody. And you can also then consider, oh boy, at the free level, everybody was kind of bad. Let me see what happens when I go up to royalty share, where I guarantee them $100 an hour. That's not much. An 8-hour book, $800 for, you know, I can guarantee you, if it takes 8 hours to listen to, it took 24 to 32 hours to do. 3 to 5 to 1 is usually it. Mm-hmm. If you're a really experienced narrator and you're not having any tech problems, you might be able to do 2, 2.5 to 1. Yay. 3 to 1 would be average. And then it goes to 4 and 5 for inexperienced people because they make mistakes and things don't quite work and they can't get it to match. It's not easy until you know what you're doing. So that's where if you do the royalty share, you take a little bit of a chance that you will not get the creme de la creme narrators. But sometimes you do. Because why would a good actor do it for nothing? Here's why. They haven't done it before. They need a kind of notch on their resume belt. And sort of this is a way, like it's not a paid internship, but the potential is good. And I was just at a conference where an actor said that I had advised him to take a project. I don't remember doing this, but I'm so glad I did. Because he says he's made a lot of money. That when it was finally done, there were thousands of downloads. It was some huge sci-fi thing. And who knew? But, you know, he said, yes, the author liked his work and thought he was good enough. And he risked his time, but all to the good, because it's been a moneymaker. It's been a popular book and it's kind of helped establish him like, I can do this. So that's how you get good people. They take a chance on your book because they think the book is good. You can kind of tell from the audition sample if it's, you know, exciting or if it's riveting right away, you can tell something. Also, if you, the author, have a website, have a book club, have some other titles you successfully published, you're a better bet, right? Because you have some experience too. And you already have a following and you already have readers and listeners. So if I am looking as a talented actor, but I haven't done this before, and so I'm going to take a chance. If I'm looking for a good project, those are things I'm looking for. Good writing, if I can recognize it in that, because you only send up a page or two. The website, they wrote 6 other books. Cool. Ooh, I see reviews and stars and blah, 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 you know, to show me that you are real. So if somebody thinks that you have a good project and you have credibility from previous experience, you're likely to get a better candidate quality. But nonetheless, people get started. I've turned a lot of people onto acx.org, the talent, the actors, and many of them have done very well because if they're good, they only do a few of these things for free. And then they start moving up, quote, the food chain of better offers, other work, others. People hear their work. Now they have a resume. Now they've done some cool things. And people are more interested in what they have to do. So it allows actors, many of which were not professional actors. One of my favorite success stories is a woman who works at HR at Parkland Hospital. And as soon as I heard her speak at an offsite workshop at a studio, which is now closed, I thought, oh, velvet voice, listen to that. And within a very short time, she was doing sort of erotica in audio. And then people were asking for her. And though she's an artist of color, it's kind of, you don't really hear that. I mean, she can do those characters, but it's so subtle that she reads for, you know, Anglo authors. So I'm so pleased for her. So there was no limitation that she was middle-aged, that she was not, you know, Caucasian, that she did not have a professional acting background, but had talent. And she was willing to do the work. You know, she got the home studio. When she first started recording, she recorded it, you know, she paid out of her own pocket to get really good editing and recording because she had this day job and she wanted to be great. Now she doesn't have to do that anymore. So people I know who've made that kind of, whether they took the investment was they paid for classes or they paid for the equipment, or because eventually she was offered and given a booth, a beautiful booth. So, but people who are invest in themselves, and the girl that I said that works out of the hotel and she could get bookings while she's on vacation, she has spent, to her credit, a small fortune on demo. She can do her own demos now, But she, you know, she would go to these demo houses and spend a small fortune, but they'd be good ones. And she'd get video games and she got anime. And so anime doesn't pay so well, but it's exciting. Video games can pay well. And if you work all the time, it all pays, you know, it all adds up in a beautiful way. So that girl, you know, she invested in her marketing tools a lot. It's really paid off. And the other friend invested in classes and high production quality, and it's paying off. So I'm so excited for them, because they'll go to, like you, conferences, they'll network, they'll meet people. And that's how you guarantee the next opportunity comes to you in an effortless way. Because we do want to help our friends. We want to help nice people, people who make you laugh, people that you admire because they're so talented, people who treated you well in a casual interchange. You root for them. You want them to be successful. So anyway, it's exciting when people take that the opportunity that's out there and seize it and go for it.
Well, and I think you hit on something, like basically what it all boils down to is, are you willing to put in the work? Because that'll always deter authors when I talk to them about the lead times, about, okay, you're going to spend so many hours in the booth, it's going to take so long to do pickups and anything like that, and the editing process. So it's going to be probably longer than you think it's going to be. And usually that'll tell that will kind of give them an indication, well, okay, I'm willing to try it and I really want to do it for myself. Or, you know what, I may just want to outsource this and just give it to a narrator.
Yes, be the voice of reality, what's really going to happen. So they can have the glory and the joy and the, I created these voices and I'm doing it. Yes, but the time it's going to take away from their writing, the publicizing of the book, meeting with their editor, having fun with hubby, you know, whatever their life is, they won't be able to do that, right? So, I think that's a really wise thing. And that's also... it definitely separates the dilettantes from the pros, you know, at the student level too, because a lot of people want to come to a class or two because they're talented. Everyone's told them that. And then they find out how much work it is. It's not for them. They realize, oh, you mean I don't just read everything perfectly effortlessly without trying? So yeah, they usually don't come back. I don't blame them. You know, I'm glad they took a shot, but they usually don't come back. And they often come in going, I've been told I'm great and I'm going to make money. And I'm like, it's really better if I told you that I sort of discovered that, you know, when I listened to you, that would be so much better, because it's almost never that, you know, it's like big ego, some ability, but clueless as to how the business works. You know, that's happened a few times, you know, sometimes the gents are a little more guilty, that the girls that are like that are just terribly pushy and annoying. And I'm just thinking, you need to make friends in the business, honey, friends. If you're annoying and push everyone away, it doesn't work. So anyway, but again, these are the war stories. It's fun to, you know, come at you. They're the rare instance. And I've had mostly, we're not expensive. We're not tied to a studio where like they're like, teachers, get out there and beat those kids for some fees. You know, a lot of it is joy and wanting to push it forward. And the guy that I did, Dave Buell, lovely guy who I totally recommend for any kind of post-production, editing it. Like if you are still really good at recording, have a decent equipment, but like Jillian, like, I don't really know how to do the good editing. You know, he would go with filters and take the breaths out and make it all perfect. And I still reach out to him to do some editing for me. If it's like an audition reel or something where I just got to sound, I have to trick them to think I can do all this here. You fix, you know, so it's totally worth it to me. But, it's like, it's exciting to think that you have a few people that you can really rely on and they come through for you. And then you guys, you know, younger people are so independent and autonomous with all the things you can do and the platforms that you can share your and showcase your work at, the pay-to-play sites where, for actors anyways, the pushy, ambitious ones get work. Not everybody does. Some people, I think, get really taken to the cleaners on those, but not everyone does. Some people do very well because they don't freak out and they can do 10 auditions a day in an hour and then go to work and not be upset about it. I mean, I personally, I would sweat it. You know, I could probably do a couple of, because I'd be trying to make it all perfect. And the people that can just crank it out, that's the numbers of it. So, you know, it's great when people think it's like, again, it's a business and rather you can enjoy the business and you certainly enjoy the success, but it, you know, you have to think about it as a business. So the ladies who want to do it and balk at the time invested, good. It's a good, better to know now than get the divorce halfway through, you know, 4 hours later, they're just miserable, you know? Yeah. And if you let them know that even if you are going to do it, if you haven't ever done it before, maybe you want to take it every other day. So the days in between, you rest your voice and you read. Then you read. Just like help them understand that pacing themselves, if they're not experienced, can be a real good friend. And if they can come in every day, or that only works for you for scheduling, keep the chunks when they're with you in front of the thing shorter and tighter so they can be more effective. And yeah, keep pushing them to do their homework if they can.
Right. And what is a good method? Because that's something I'm still learning right now, is kind of how to basically take care of my instrument, like you were saying, okay. Like treating, like taking care of your voice, because I know I've done singing in the past as well. And you have to be very careful with warmups so you don't strain it. And I know you can do it on the voice acting as well.
Yes. Well, first of all, a little light physical workout. I mean, it can be, you know, if you're an older person or a little bit disabled, you can just even do chair stretches and big breaths and tummy clenches. So a little light workout, you know, 5 to 10 minutes, a dog walk, little yoga stretches. I mean, if I can do girly push-ups, a light workout already, I'm starting to breathe deeper, that the oxygen's coming, the blood flow is a little bit better. I might be panting. I'm not going to record immediately then, but I'm starting to, and then humming is a very relaxing, non-violent way to warm up your voice. A soprano with this gorgeous voice who kind of ruined her voice when she was young, you know, through emotional stress. She was all these things like, don't let this happen to you. So I remember that was a big one for me. She says, I just want you to hum. Really? That's all? Yes. So, you know, you just like, and then maybe like sink it down. And then right in the middle, and if it cracks or feels like it's dripping your throat, that's too much. Then back off, you know, just hum on a tone and then you could go up or down. You could just big breath. I feel my nose kind of wiggling, big breath. And maybe like 5 up and then relax. And then I'm starting to sit up straight and feel here. So if I can fill this with air, meaning I don't feel this is going to be visual, just, you know, oral for your listener, but basically by sitting up straight, keeping a little connection with your core and letting your chest resonate, you're taking the strain off your throat. So you let this whole, like a bellows, you know, a bellows is that thing you push out and then you squeeze the air out, or almost like a bagpipe. So you want to lift up your chest, your thorax, fill it up with air. And then maybe just do a few kind of exhalations where you make a sound. Almost like acting out a sigh. And you can go up and down. You know, like lightly stretch your instrument in terms of pitch. It's not about singing so much, but it's just to put that little bit of light musicality and flow in your voice. So it's not choking or chopping off. And if you feel like, God, this is still, I'm kind of, it's catching. Hot tea with lemon and honey. Honey is a natural anti-inflammatory. It does. I mean, I realize if you're a diabetic, that's a no-go. But then I would just do the hot water with a little squeeze of lemon, or even a little drop of stevia, if it just to make it a little bit sweeter, if you like that. But definitely the honey, if you can tolerate it, is a very good, you know, cough syrup substitute. And it is very soothing. It's anti-inflammatory, antiviral. And so it's very good if you're starting to feel a little, gosh, I was great this morning. Now I'm a little fatigued. Hot tea and a little half a teaspoon of honey. And if you like cinnamon, which I love, a half a teaspoon with honey and a little shaky shake of cinnamon on top, also another antiviral thing. So those things are natural they're in the, you know, not the fridge, but the kitchen. You don't have to make a trip to CVS for that. If you get tired mouth and funny mouth noises, slices of green apple, like a tart Granny Smithy type green apple. You don't have to eat the whole apple, a couple little slices. And that really cuts through that mouth noises and kind of phlegmy sound that sometimes you don't even have it in real life. You get nervous, you get a little dry, and there it comes and it won't go away. That's a little helpful thing. Light warm up, hydrate. In the tickly tired time, hot tea is better than caffeine. Not so good. I love coffee. Save it for after a little espresso or a little decaf espresso. Caffeine can actually, and I heard this from another like really good singer, like Broadway tryout kind of guy, it dries out your vocal cords. I did not know that. It dries out. So avoiding caffeine is a good idea. A little herb tea is great. A little bit of black tea has much less caffeine. Like in the morning, you could do black tea and then record late morning, you know, give it a little break in there. But too much caffeine right before will most likely irritate and dry out your cords. Not a good idea. Save it for treats for later. And then water. Seltzer, if you don't burp too much. It does make me burp, but I love it. So, and then definitely hot tea or hot water, herbal or light kind of diluted black tea with honey and lemon, if you're allowed honey. Really good. And then when I'm recording, like, oh, I'm doing a project this week, I'll drink 3 to 5 cups of tea a day, which I don't normally do. So, and green tea, it's just a really good, you know, booster, antioxidant. It's a good one. And normal green tea to me tastes like something you'd find on the shower curtain, just like, So like you may need to add like peach or the hibiscus or steam, you know, jazz it up. But it, you know, if you find a green tea that's flavorful that you like, that is great stuff. Even if you're like, oh, next week I'm recording and I'm in training this week. I'm reading the whole book ahead of time and I'm practicing out loud to my book club. All great ideas, by the way. You're going to read your own book, have a dinner party. The price of dinner is you'll have to listen for half an hour and I'm going to read it. Because if you get over your nerves and you read to small groups of people, then it'll be easy in the studio. It'll be this intimate friend, your microphone buddy. And that will help you too. So yeah. And the last thing for ladies who want to do it themselves, if you've never done it before, consider hiring someone in a studio who has at least recorded these before. Mm-hmm. Get a producer, collaborate with a studio guy. It's like, yeah, I've done a few of them, because you'll just have a lot more comfort and secure that you're doing it right. Otherwise you could do a good recording and the level's all wrong. And got to pay to have the whole thing, you know, levelized or whatever they do. So it's just, you know, so that's where experience will keep you from having a professional project. And even if you were good, you know, there's certain specs like that are audible friendly, that are ACX compatible. You would want to record with that from the get-go. Why have to do it twice, right? So those are things worth checking out. And if you're working with a pro, he or she, with the studio person, should know that. And use before you would pay them or have a little contract. Okay, you're going to record me. It's going to be so much an hour. I need to know that this will be compatible with Audible or ACX. And that would be a reasonable thing to ask if you're paying someone, because there are 800 numbers and tutorials, YouTube, and all that stuff is free. That information is free, but does take time and experience if you haven't done it before. Again, as an old school actor, typically, I would say at this point, an author might would contact me directly or an audio publisher, and I would still quite likely, you know, be in a situation where I'd either record my own and upload raw audio or go and collaborate with a director, producer in a studio. That happens less and less for audiobook. This certainly happens in you know, anime, video game, commercials, other kinds of voice recording. But yes, for ladies who want to do it and have never done it before, get a little coaching to make sure your voice sounds great. Practice out loud for your friends and family and fans and book club type people. And if you've never done it, hire carefully your studio so that, or if you've got home studio because your son is a musician, great, but carefully know how it's put together so you don't, you know, break your heart by putting hours and hours into it and find out that simply will not be professionally compatible with the broadcast expectations. So, and that stuff can all be handled. It's not, oh, I can't do it because of that. Yes, you can, but do it ahead of time. Figure that out ahead of time. You want to go in with the right setting. And sometimes that's just maybe a half hour consultation or hour consultation with the pro over Skype or FaceTime. They set it all up for you. They tell the studio guy or you, this is the setting it needs to be. This is the sound level. You figure that out and then you're done. You don't have to keep hiring them. You know, you got the settings properly applied by a professional and now you're ready to record. And so that's a lot of what I've done is I'll hire someone at the beginning to like get it all set up for me. Show me what I need to do and don't show me anything else because I won't be able to remember. So I'll learn just what I need to do and I have good equipment and then therefore I do my part and then it's like part of the machine. I hand it off usually at the end for someone else to do the next step. But that when you said producer, today people expect the talent to do everything but the writing, you know, to be the voice, to produce it themselves, to make it compliant with ACX.org. You know, a lot more skill sets are required to be a success. So, yeah.
Right. And that's what I do on my end. Usually I help them outsource the talent if that's what they want to do. And then I'll edit it and then get it all ACX compliant. And then, we'll upload from there. Exactly. Yeah. And I love that you've mentioned like kind of maybe going to someone for like a little bit of help if you need to, because a lot of times that's where I found out where to start is sometimes asking someone else. And I actually had an audio guy once tell me when I was kind of narrating and sent him some of my pieces to kind of look over and kind of edit and kind of show me how to do. He actually called out something I was very happy he did, because I didn't realize that. He said there was some cussing in the book, and he said, you seem to have a hang up on this one word. Like, you can tell you're uncomfortable with a word. And I was like, oh, okay. Well, and I didn't want that to translate. The character wasn't uncomfortable with a word. Right. So it was just very eye-opening to me to kind of see what other people hear in my voice.
And sometimes like we are unaware, we kind of betray, you know, like, oh, you know, I really am uncomfortable saying that, or I really don't approve of people that use that cussing. And you're thinking, I'm not consciously thinking that, but it's still comes through, you know, it comes on a wavelength of the experienced listener. So it's great to have another set of ears for that. Sometimes you will have done a really great job at one line reading, will throw it out. And it's like, oh, the person quit listening, or I've just now demonstrated I'm not the right person for this job. So it's wonderful to have someone else say, you know, it was all great, but there's one thing I'd retake that. You hear that? Mm-hmm. Yeah, I would do that one over. And we can't always hear that with ourselves. I mean, some people hear everything that's wrong and it wasn't even wrong, but I think I'm more the other way. I think it's all wonderful. And I'm like, oh yeah, yeah, that is, yeah, that's bad. Let's fix that. So I'm like slow to come to the party to realize, oh yeah, that, no, that's no good. So yes, well, that's so cute that they were able to help you recognize that.
Yes, and that was amazing. And CJ, you have given so much great advice and a great place to start for a lot of people who want to start narration or do their own audiobooks or even outsource their narration to other narrators. Yeah. So where can listeners find you for coaching or your workshops, and how can they connect with you?
Well, I would be delighted to hear from people. And I'm simple as my name is CJ Critt, C like Carol, J for Jane, C like Carol, R like Richard, I India, T Tom. So CJ Critt, it's all one word, lowercase is fine, at Mac, short for Macintosh, MAC.com. And I'd be delighted to hear from you. I'm about ready to launch at the end of the month a new reboot on my website. There is a cjcritt.com online. It's terribly out of date, but there's a fun list of like audiobooks I've done and some reviews, and there's some samples and whatnot. But like I say, you know, wait for the better, the new and improved is coming. And I'm excited about that, because the last time the software changes, like me, Sarah, it's like, well, wait a minute, I don't know how to do updates anymore. Crap. So it's, I finally had to get an outside designer, but we're very excited about putting it all together. So yes, be delighted to hear from anyone. I've got some classes coming up in September at Lupo. I have a class next week at Stage West. It may be sold out, but there may be two spots left. I think there's six signed up. I usually try like no more than eight guys, because I want everyone to get attention. And then people do contact me for one-on-one. They'll say, you know, I'd love to take a class, but I have a specific project now, and I need help now just with this. And so one-on-one gives you all my attention. You don't take other classes that maybe are not, you know, the focus of what you're looking for, or you don't have time for. And you would then be able to prepare for that presentation, that first chapter, maybe get an assessment, read from me, like, what do you think? Do I sound like I can do these characters? So you don't have to like sign up for a package. You can just go one or two times and go, that answered that question, or dang, I'm ready to do it. So yes, for people that have unanswered questions, let me know via email. I'd love to, you know, hear from you. And there may be a way that I can help serve you on your writing and audio journey. It'd be a real delight. Thank you.
Thanks so much to CJ for joining the podcast. As I briefly mentioned in the interview, I have produced a dozen audiobooks, and I'm working on narrating several others. If you're interested in learning more about the audiobook process, please feel free to reach out to me on any of my socials, Facebook, Instagram, or Twitter, at Romance the Story. Don't forget to like, subscribe, or review the podcast. It helps me reach a wider audience so I can bring more amazing interviews your way. Finally, if you're interested in any of CJ's narration or voiceover lessons, check the show notes for links to her upcoming online classes in September. I've attended several, and I take away something new every time. As always, be safe, stay well, and keep writing. Bye!